Welcome to The Partnership Economy. This podcast explores the power of partnerships through candid conversations with industry leaders. Join our hosts, Dave Yovano, CEO, and Todd Crawford, co-founder of Impact.com, as they unpack the future of partnerships as a lever for scale and an opportunity to put the consumer first.
Welcome to today's Partnership Economy podcast. I'm excited to introduce Josh Knopman. He's the Director of Growth and Digital Product at Caraway. He's also been a leading marketer for other consumer brands such as Quip. They make oral care products. And Newell Brands, which everyone should recognize, they make Rubbermaid, Papermate, Sharpie, and Sunbeam products, for example. And Josh, I was hoping to start with Caraway, though. It's a relatively new brand that many people may not be fully aware of, like what products Caraway makes, how they got started. Could you start us out by just sharing a little bit about the company's background?
Yeah, you know, Caraway is less than 2.5 years old. And it really started when our founder actually got Teflon poisoning. He was cooking. He left his fry pan on the stovetop while he went to take a call. Ended up having to call poison control when he was feeling lightheaded, dizzy, and found out he potentially had Teflon poisoning, or the Teflon flu, wow, as it's called. And so what he really wanted to do from that, having some experience in the cookware industry and the home goods industry, was take that and create products that would help prevent that. High quality, high design, non-toxic, big focus on the non-toxic home goods, starting with cookware, which is something that most people use on a near daily basis. And when creating that, he also wanted to focus on the holistic experience, right? So there's the cooking experience, the non-stick, the non-toxic, of course, but also the storage aspect. I'm sure most of us have it stacked in our cabinets, a little leaning tower there. And we really wanted to think about it holistically from the beginning. And that's kind of where Caraway Home got started.
Wow. You know, I think about, that's such a fascinating story. I'm going way back in my head thinking about how does anyone even find out about Teflon poisoning or Teflon flu? I would think probably pre-internet, people would have never even realized, you know, what that was. You're just sick and you can't trace it back to anything. And, you know, that just kind of points out how things have changed, I think, with consumers and how they source information about a condition like that, but also finding products like yours. And I think that's really kind of shaped today's modern consumer journey. I think you would agree that people are just doing a lot of research about products, kind of buying with purpose right now. I'm thinking back, you know, since we're going in the Wayback Machine here, like, you know, when I moved into my first apartment, I remember just going to Sears or some local store and picking out whatever pots and pans were there just based on the packaging and the price. But I think a lot has changed since then. It just seems to be a big market, right, for, I wouldn't call it a niche product. How would you describe the Caraway products? Like your customer today, what are they looking for exactly? And how are they sourcing information about your products? How do they find out about you?
It's a really actually wider consumer base, I think, than you'd expect. Because to your point, it's not just a niche anymore. And when we really wanted to make sure when you created Caraway that it wasn't one. And so that's why it's not just, hey, here's this non-toxic product, right? We wanted to make it very, very high quality. We wanted to make it something you'd be proud to show off on your countertops, which is often, you know, a differentiator. And so for us, those were all kind of things that we were thinking about there. And to your point, you know, the purchase journey has changed. People do a lot more research ahead of time, obviously with so much buying being done online, especially in the last few years, the spike that people have seen. You know, this was a tremendous opportunity and one that kind of allowed us to really scale the brand and start to build the brand across the US.
Maybe the rise of the internet, the rise of social publishing platform, all this information that's out there about great products like Caraway and like conditions that exist, like there's health benefits, right, of living a certain way. And that didn't used to be a thing, you know, like probably even 10 years ago. So, you know, I think a lot has changed in terms of how people find out about products like yours. You've got great looking products that people are proud to put on their countertop as opposed to tucking away in a drawer, but there's also a health benefit. So I think what that leads to is go back to that example that I gave where I would just go into a Sears local store and buy based on packaging or whatever's cheapest. Seems like people are buying products like yours with purpose now. How has that shaped how you're acquiring new customers, acquiring revenue? Like I would imagine that, you know, if we just start with like the partnerships that you have, I know you have many different types of partners that are out there talking about your product, like creating this information, this commerce content out there about your products. I have to imagine that your customers aren't necessarily looking for a coupon code or a discount on your product, right? They're buying your product for a driven reason. Do you agree with that? And if so, how has that shaped who you align with to refer you business?
Yeah, exactly. The number one reason in our post-purchase survey that people buy our products is non-toxic. Everything else is quite a bit below that. But yeah, I think also to changes in the marketing landscape in the last several years, right? It's a lot harder to build a brand nowadays. And so you need something beyond just throwing some pretty ads on Facebook and Instagram, right? Especially for products like Caraway, but this really applies to any product, whether or not you have a higher average order value, is spreading the word, building the brand through, to your point, partnerships, right? From the very beginning for us, we approached that very intentionally. When I came into the business, it was pre-revenue, pre-launch, but there was already really robust CRM documentation in place with publishers, with partners, with influencers that were on our minds and we were in contact with as we wanted to build the brand. And so our job in those early stages was really to get the brand, get the products into as many hands as possible. And so that, you know, we had the big publishers, we had Food and Wine, we had Vogue, we had Refinery 29, but there were also a lot of smaller mid-tier publishers as well. You know, one of my favorites is the Cookware Advisor. They're based in Canada, huge US audience. And this is often comes up quite highly in search results as people are researching the cookware. It's a highly researched category. And when we were building these partnerships, yes, we were offering samples. Yes, we were answering questions about our toxicity reports, about, you know, how it holds up over time, things like that. We really wanted to be as transparent as possible, build those partnerships. And to your point, you know, not just rely on, hey, here's a pretty cookware set at a discount, right? You know, we really wanted to build the brand. At any given time, you know, Caraway, we really focus on actually not giving discounts. So while we do give offers in certain channels here, there, 90% plus of our orders come in at full price. And that's how we've been able to maintain margins, maintain average order value and things like that. But on the partnership development side, this is something that's been critical for us. At this point, we have well over 200 partners ranging from smaller bloggers to large publishers, like I said, but also a huge influencer and ambassador network of around 1,800 or so influencers, all the way from some that have quite literally maybe a few hundred, 1,000 followers, but very, very dedicated ones, to those that have tens, hundreds of thousands, spanning from, you know, mommy bloggers to lifestyle. And so building those partnerships, getting Caraway in front of them, we've gifted thousands of samples at this point, and educating them on Caraway has been huge for building our brand, building the brand awareness, but also the halo effect, right, that we see on other channels. Yes, you know, we invest quite a bit in Facebook, in Google, and in other digital and offline channels. But when someone sees an ad for a cookware set that's $400 like ours, they do that research. They go online. They want to see YouTube videos. They want to see articles from brands they know. And there's that halo effect. And from two angles, you get the halo effect of these well-known publishers when Refinery 29 Vogue writes about you. You get the benefit of their well-known brand. But you also get the halo effect on your other channels when you have these partnerships, right? Your Facebook ads will convert that much better. Same with your Google ads. And that is really why we've put partnerships front and center and have been a priority from the very beginning when building Caraway.
So, wow, Josh, that was amazing. There's lots to unpack there. And what I consistently hear from our audience is, and we talk about just the broader term partnership, just understanding a little bit more of what that means exactly through a couple of examples. You ran through a great set of types of partners that you're working. You're talking about working with ambassadors. I think you said you had an ambassador network of 1,700, 1,800 ambassadors working. You know, what are those? How do they work? I know you've got large publishers that you've spent time with to really understand your products and write about it. I think that's part of your partnership program. You've got other business partnerships that you've got, traditional affiliates are part of your program. What I was hoping to do is maybe just unpack a couple examples, some specific examples of certain partnerships that you have. And what I'm looking for is, how did you identify them to work with? Like, I think a lot of times in a partnership development strategy, you're looking for compatible partners where you guys share an ICP, an ideal customer profile. There's just a relevant audience. You know, there could be like product integration, right? You know, the things that you're doing just really gel together. Could you maybe just share a couple examples of some specific types of partnerships that you have, specific partners that you have, and how you've approached them and how you work with them?
Yeah, you know, our customer profile skews pretty heavily female, is a little bit older, but a pretty broad range, you know, 25 to 44. Is kind of the sweet spot there. and also kind of higher household income. We are a premium product, the cookware set sells for $400. Mm-hmm. And so we were really looking for partners that do fit that profile. And some of the larger partners, like I said, span quite a bit. And there are also ones that are more niche that line up with the interests of our audience. So non-toxic, healthy eating, healthy cooking is a big one there. And so, you know, one of my favorite partners that we've worked with now for probably 2 years, maybe a year and a half, is called Organic Authority. And so they are all about living, you know, a healthy organic lifestyle. And we, I believe, reached out to them back in the day. They review a lot of different cookware brands, a lot of different other products. And we really wanted to get the product in front of them, explain, this is the vision behind Caraway, but try it for yourself. Here's the toxicity reports to prove everything. And we've really expanded that partnership over time. We've done everything from, of course, you know, being featured on their site, but we've done emails, Facebook integrations, and whitelisting. Partnership kind of expansion across the board based on kind of the impact that we are seeing. And we are seeing it resonate so well with the users who came to their site, with the people on their email list. And from there, integrate into more pages, dedicated review, and things like that. And, you know, that's just one example. And I mentioned we have over 200 partners like that across the board. You know, for us, I think it takes a lot of investing of time and resources and building that partnership and being collaborative. And to your point on identifying them, we approach it a couple different ways. We, of course, you know, use Impact Radius for our partnership platform for recruiting, for management, which has been tremendously helpful. We also kind of look and pull data from various places, including our Google Ads account or our organic Google searches, looking at broader terms, cookware set, best cookware sets, you know, best nonstick cookware, and more specific ones around non-toxic, nonstick, things like that. And taking those keywords and researching, okay, which publishers, which blog articles specifically as well, rank highly in these search results, especially on pages 1 and to a lesser extent 2, 3. And that's how we kind of went through. Our goal was to be everywhere, to be on as many of those lists as possible, whether it's from review.com, a well-known review site, or a smaller mid-sized blogger that's more niche and more focused. And so we approached it publisher by publisher across the board to really build out that base and coverage so that when you Google a lot of these terms now, you'll see us in the vast majority of these lists. You'll see us in the YouTube reviews that pop up alongside it and the thousands of customer reviews on our website as well. And so we really wanted to take a data-driven approach across the board to line it up, yes, with our customer profile, and also line it up kind of with the intent, with the volume of the searches in the category.
Yeah, there's one more that I would throw in there that I don't think you mentioned that just seems like an obvious one, and that is partnerships with meal kit providers. I think you've got partnerships with HelloFresh and Blue Apron, for example, where you'll just do inserts with them. Pretty simple, easy ways to partner with very obvious, compatible partners. You guys obviously, I think, have access to very similar audiences. I just think that's super interesting. So when you look at this, it's not a lot of what you talk about in the world of partnerships is really not the world of advertising, right? The coin operated world of advertising. You're putting a dollar in, you're getting a click back. What you're talking about is like some real business development work that is a little heavier on the front and then maybe endures sometimes, I guess, for years in this case. Could you maybe just talk a little bit about the differences there as you look at the different types of marketing that you do? You know, what makes this effort around partnerships kind of unique? You know, some advantages, disadvantages of it?
Yeah, to your point, it definitely takes a slightly different muscle there to build this up, but a muscle I think that is more and more required for brands as time goes on, as we see the challenges in the digital advertising space, especially with privacy updates, iOS 14.5, and then things like that. And so, yeah, it does take a different skill set. But I think it takes one that also is in some ways complementary. Like I mentioned, the kind of data-driven aspect of pulling from Google Ads, Google Search Console, things that advertisers are perhaps more familiar with, and unifying that exactly with the business development side, kind of to build those partnerships across the board. And it is something that takes a lot more time investment, especially for the partnerships that really matter and getting those recommendations. I mean, I've personally been on email chains that are 50 emails long, answering questions, going back and forth, offering to hop on calls and explain more, which is something that sometimes what it takes to get an endorsement from these publishers, from these partners. And so, yeah, it's not just put a dollar in, put a dollar out. But benefits you see are just so tremendous. You see the full funnel impact. I mentioned the halo effect earlier, right? You are hitting all stages of the funnel. You know, if someone's browsing an article, they may not even have intention to buy cookware. And it's really those upper funnel efforts. It could be on the review side when we are aware of the brand or have some intention in the category, or kind of right before they're looking to purchase, wanting that last bit of validation from other trusted brands, other trusted media partners or publishers or bloggers or influencers. And so for us, we see it as a really robust full funnel effort, and one that, you know, we've invested in tremendously in the past, and we continue to invest and see it only getting more important moving forward.
If you're enjoying this podcast, we'd love to see you at Partnerships Experience, our annual flagship conference taking place in person for the first time in 3 years. Please join us on June 14th in New York City at Chelsea Piers to network, tap into the experiences of partnership leaders, and of course, enjoy the breathtaking views of the Pier 60 waterfront. To secure your ticket, check out the episode description or go to www.ipx22.splashthat.com.
You mentioned something that I think is important, and that is that partnerships are really becoming the new requirement, I think, to be competitive in business for revenue acquisition. You mentioned kind of the challenges that traditional advertising channels are having right now. You know, everyone's kind of by now well aware of Apple doing away with IDFA. You know, Google's announced doing away with their cookie as well as retargeting. It's caused a real problem for brands to effectively target, track, and measure ads these days. And you know, we've all seen the ad prices on the big tech platforms kind of go through the roof. You know, so there's some real tactical challenges. But I think the reality, though, is that today's consumer is going to buy based on what other customers have to say about the product, less about what a brand has to say themselves. And so I think that's really what's driving that requirement, is that today's modern consumer is in full control. They're in charge of their own journey. They're seeking out information, right? With the businesses, the creators, the publishers that you're talking about, they're going to them for, hey, what product should I buy? I'm interested in this, that, and the other for these reasons. Tell me about it. Tell me what you think. It could be a review, it could be a recommendation, it could be just information that they're publishing about it. But I think that's the reality. But the holistic side of marketing and advertising, I would think you would agree, is important. It's not like this or that, right? Everything works in concert with each other. I personally feel that like there's just more weight being shifted into this channel of partnerships. Do you agree with that? And if so, or even not, like what is that like at Caraway? How do you guys think of partnerships in the entirety of marketing and what it takes to cut through today and capture someone's attention and buy your products?
Yeah, completely. And I think we've seen the space change so much. When I was working at Newell Brands several years back, people were talking. They were talking about Amazon. They were talking about Facebook. They were talking about Google. There was very little, if any, mention at that time that I can recall of talking about affiliate. And I think for a long time, when people referred to affiliate, it was discount sites. It was just discount sites. And I think that's really changed. And I think you see with these types of partners in the content commerce space specifically, you see that they have a much higher incremental contribution to your business, right? To kind of that full funnel effect I spoke to earlier. I think that part is really transforming, I would say, the entire affiliate landscape. And so I personally have more and more conversations with other brands hiring dedicated people on the affiliate side, thinking about it much earlier, beyond just getting a few press mentions, perhaps with a new brand launch or a new product launch, thinking about integrating it into their broader strategies. And that's always my, you know, one of my first pieces of advice to a founder who's looking to start a new brand of, yes, of course, planning out the website, planning out the Facebook ads, the Google ads, things like that. But how are you thinking long-term about developing these partnerships, building out your affiliate program, making sure it's set up to scale as much as possible and allocating the resources to that?
Yeah, and I think you would agree, like a way to cut through is through these alliances, these partners, quite frankly, these other publishers. I know you've done things where you've invited them to trial your products, where you're kind of briefing them. Here's why this is important. Here's how we've made these products. And that inspires them to go back and inform their audiences through their unique connection to them on why someone should buy a Caraway product. And that's what resonates with the modern consumer today, right? Hearing somebody else advocate for something, they feel that that information is authentic, you know, regardless of whether or not they're being compensated for it, right? You know, I think we've crossed that line as an industry where it's okay to write authentic content, be compensated for that content while still being true to the customer, right? That's the other kind of evolution that I think has happened probably just in the last 5 years. I think comments keep editors and creators in check, the infamous unsubscribe button, but of course, you know, just overall audience attention and how you're faring. I think this is what's been great about this whole evolution is that editors, creators really put that customer first. Like they're trying to serve their needs and just be authentic and learn about products like yours, write about it, you know, give that information to their audience that they want. And, you know, if you can put that work in on the front, you know, it's going to pay back in spades, if you will, long-term essentially. Doesn't mean that you stop running Facebook ads or even TV ads, which I think you do a number of. It's just ensuring that as a competitive channel, you know, alongside some of these other marketing tactics, that you know, you're making these connections, because that has become the primary path from the data that I've seen in terms of how consumers are finding about products like Caraway, but also making that ultimate purchase decision. Do you guys talk about that idea that I just tried to articulate there as a senior leadership team inside of Caraway, for example?
Yeah, you know, we definitely do. I think if you look back, it wasn't even that far that when it came to buying a brand, of course, cookware is an example, right? It was all about retail. It was in-store packaging, and it was the brand. Had you heard of that brand? Did they have a good reputation? You know, working at Newell Brands, Calphalon is, of course, a very well-known brand in the cookware space there. So that for so long was kind of how things were. And as the space has changed, e-com, D2C, Amazon, the evolution of marketing channels, Google, of course, it has changed so much. And consumers are empowered like they never have been before, right? And at the same time, us on the brand side are empowered. We can launch these brands. Caraway is less than 2.5 years old and sell quite a substantial amount just online. But in order to do so, to build that brand, you do need to develop these partnerships. You do need to invest the time. And yes, it's definitely part of kind of a fully, or should be part of, I should say, a fully integrated media mix.
You just made me think of something, and I'm just wondering if this is where it goes. When I think of what the future holds, I think of brands have been primarily trying to connect with that end consumer to convince them to buy. I just wonder if TV ads and other marketing tactics start taking aim at these content creators instead, just knowing how heavily reliant consumers are on their information, because that's a big part of how this stuff works in concert, right? The more known Caraway is as a brand, the more these content creators and influencers and other businesses are actually going to want to work with Caraway. That's my theory, because it's that credibility, right? There's a certain awareness element that is just going to make them more relevant with their audience. And so I don't know, maybe we'll see some more advertising targeted at the creators themselves as well as customers, but be interesting to see how that plays out.
It's definitely a snowball effect. I think one of my favorite stories, and I forget the brand, but they were trying to get distribution in Walmart, and Walmart didn't think they were big enough. And so they did, if I recall correctly, out-of-home advertising, TV advertising targeted in Bentonville, Arkansas, Walmart's headquarters, where many of their buyers are, to give the impression that they were a much bigger brand than they actually are. And I think this is kind of the modern version of that, what you're just talking about right now. As you build up, as you get more and more, you can take that to the next partner as you advertise to each one. Hey, we have these dozens of brands and dozens of partners kind of behind us. Look at this review from Refinery. Look at this review from, like I said, Organic Authority, any of these. Yep. And it helps across the board. It helps in sales. Heck, it helps when you're trying to recruit people to build a brand across the board. And as you get more and you can provide more examples, more context, it makes people, content creators especially, some of the larger ones have a lot of offers in front of them, take a second look, to your point.
Yep. Yeah, I love it. That's great. Now, keeping it real, what's the biggest challenge that you're finding, you know, just dealing with partnerships today?
Yeah, you know, I would say two parts to that. So one, building the relationships at scale is definitely a challenge. Like I said, we have hundreds of partners, well, thousands, if you include, of course, all the influencers, bloggers as well. Managing all of those partnerships, keeping them up to date and developing that relationship at scale is very, very difficult. And then at an individual partner level, of trying to scale it beyond a certain extent, right? How far can you take it? In the Organic Authority example I mentioned, you know, we took it from one mention in one article to multiple on-site articles, to emails, to Facebook whitelisting. We've worked with other publishers, you know, such as Meredith and across many of their sub-brands, and working with them on, okay, you know, if we invest X amount of dollars in traffic, what driving additional traffic to these pages, to these features, where can we net out with that? You know, looking at it from a direct response ROAS CAC lens across the board. And so that's something that I think us and everyone else, we're tinkering, we're figuring out what works, that are transparently some of the challenges in the space. But I think there are tools there to help you. You know, there's impact there to help you manage your partners, recruit your partners at scale. There's a robust amount of tools across the board to help with that. And I think as you build those relationships and you figure out, you look at the data that you have in the platform from, you know, multiple sources as well, to help inform where do you really zero in on your bandwidth, your limited bandwidth, your efforts to make those partnerships grow as much as possible.
One specific question on working with influencers and creators, because I've heard, you know, different feedback on this. Are you finding a number of them, and I think this goes for editors as well, wanting to start their relationship with you on a like a fixed fee basis, not on a performance basis? And if so, how do you deal with that? What's your kind of mix in working with large and small content creators, influencers, as well as editors on the compensation component?
Yeah, you know, we've been very successful to date, and credit to our internal team here at building those partnerships primarily and starting with kind of commission first. Commission first has lots of benefits on the brand side. It's lower risk, but on the influencer side as well, it provides unlimited theoretical upside. Mm-hmm. We have dispersed hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars to these bloggers, some I mentioned, and influencers, I should say, some that are very, very small, and they were able to take this and make a substantial amount. Some of our top ones alone bring in tens of thousands of dollars per year just from Caraway, right? Mm-hmm. And so we have been successful with a combination of the commissioning structure and the kind of sampling of admittedly a high average order value product at $400 in building that. But how do you keep them interested? How do you scale it to our earlier conversation over time? And we're still experimenting with that for sure. I think there's a lot of flat fee partnerships and options and things like that. But I think it's all really closely collaborating with your influencers, with your partners, and seeing what you can do. For us this holiday season, right? Our feedback from holiday 2020 was all of our ambassadors were saying, we are swamped. Every brand wants us to promote them. There's so much noise. This brand is paying this much. This brand is paying this much. What can you offer? And so this year, going into holiday 2021, when we launched our cyber offer, we gave it to our influencer partners first. We said, before this goes on site, before this goes out to our email list, you are the messengers who are able to take this and put it out to your followers, put it out to the world. And of course, with it being our best offer of the year, and in a lot of people's minds, our only offer of the year, the conversion rates are insane. And that worked so, so well this past year in activating a significant portion of our base. We did test and work on flat fee and cost per click CPC arrangements as well, but also just working collaboratively with them and feeling, you know, okay, you get really busy in mid-November, you're working on this. Okay, how about early November? How about we give you this exclusive, and working and finding what levers and what things you can offer them as part of your partnership.
Yeah, that's a great pro tip right there, just in terms of engagement with your partners, right? Giving them that social currency with their audience, something that's unique to them, that's not out wild, that's exclusive to your guys' relationship, is awesome. And I like your point about, hey, the potential on a performance basis, we're talking about like the affiliate links or commission on sale, right, is unlimited. There is something unique here where a lot of this content will sit out there for years sometimes, right? And there's a residual earning essentially for that content creator and a reason to kind of keep that up, as opposed to more of the campaign nature of a one and done, you know, fixed fee sort of relationship. I see both. Like I'm starting to see brands like yours and others start sometimes with maybe a new partner that they don't have any experience with on a fixed fee basis. And then it reverts to kind of a performance basis for the long term, right? The residual value for both parties. And that's usually like the start of a relationship. And then as they get to know, there's more comfort, maybe it goes one way or another. But a point that I want to make there is a lot of people associate the compensation model with the tactic. And to me, they're very different. Like what I believe is most important is that when you find a partner there's an investment of time, energy, and resources to understand each other, to where the publisher or the creator, the business gets behind your brand. Like, they're advocating for your brand to their audience or to their customers for a certain reason. They're producing content. They're saying what they like and what they don't like. It's their review. It's their opinion. It's information that their audience is searching for. So they're going to represent it. It's less about the compensation model. It's more about that motion, that workflow. It's like, they care about you. They're going to spend time with you. They demoed your product and they're going to say, they're going to give their review, let's say. And whether they're paid on a fixed fee or on a commission doesn't detract from the fact that it's a partnership, right? There's an investment of time to understand each other and, you know, create this commercial-based information, this commerce content for the audience. And so that, to me, is what defines the world of partnerships more so than the compensation model. So I thought I'd just kind of make that point. Maybe if we were to leave folks on a more positive note as well, like, as you look at the outlook for partnerships, like, you know, is there anything exciting or interesting that's kind of happening out in the wild, either at Caraway or elsewhere, that you might want to share with the audience?
On everyone's minds, of course, right now is TikTok, how they can facilitate partnerships there. YouTube, well, obviously, has been huge for years, is an area that I know a lot of brands have been increasing their investments in, specifically on the partnership front in the last couple of years, especially, and moving forward, prioritizing it. And so I think it's branching out, if looking at it from an influencer angle, not just Instagram. I think the two were essentially synonymous for a long time and to a certain extent still are. But I think we're seeing that diversification in channels and in where people have the content across the board. I think the increased focus in general on partnerships, like we discussed, is kind of a really interesting trend and something I think we're seeing kind of across the board. And brands collaborating with each other. You talked about this earlier, but we've worked with HelloFresh now for, I want to say, 2 years or so. They own Green Chef as well, which is, you had to name a brand that has a very similar audience to ours, who really care about what they're eating, you know, more premium price point, really fits the audience quite well. And other meal kit providers, brands being more open and in non-competitive brands, I should say, being open to collaboration, to developing partnerships with each other as the e-commerce space gets more competitive and advertising becomes more difficult across the board. And so those are a few of the trends definitely on my mind and things that exciting to test them in the current moment and see them play out for sure.
Yeah, what I personally find exciting about some of those examples is where brands are and businesses are coming together to create a better experience for the customer, right? You know, yes, you share an audience, but you also have the potential to add value to that experience. It could just be like another great product that stands for what you stand for. You know, it could be a point of convenience in terms of like how you're sourcing things. That's what I get excited about. And I love how just organically it seems like brands are starting to come together where it makes sense. You know, 1 + 1 can equal 3. And maybe one last question about you, like, just more personally, because I think our audience loves this part of these conversations as well. It's just you personally, like, you're a very accomplished marketer. Any tips, like, if you were to kind of go back and give some advice to your younger self, for example, you know, what advice would you give yourself or anyone else out there as they're kind of progressing their career professionally in this industry? What advice would you give?
Yeah, I would say sweat the details and think about how you can stand out. When I got my job at Quip, to stand out, I built a personal website, Brandon at Quip Colors, with copy, you know, focus, you know, thinking through Quip values, how they approach things. And they got a heck of a lot of resumes. And I was told later, you know, when they were going quickly through everything, and my resume also has some Quip branding on it as well, that made them take a second look, right? When you do the research, you go above and beyond, you differentiate a little bit. And then when you get there, you learn as much as possible. You dive in, you make yourself uncomfortable. You put yourself in those uncomfortable positions from a learning standpoint, because you know, kind of coming out of it, it's going to pay off. The dividends will be huge. And that's how I've tried to approach my career. And I see recruiting so many jobs. You know, I have a team of 9 right now, recruiting another 6 roles. If anyone's looking for a job, definitely Caraway Home is hiring. Looking for people that are willing to go that extra mile and put themselves out there in whatever form that is. It makes a big difference. And I think that's the thing that I would say, you know, sure, you can send your resume to 100 brands, but think about who you really want and put the effort in. And when you do, it shows, because not a lot of people do.
Well, Josh, that's all we've got time for today. I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. This has been an exciting conversation. I know I, for one, have learned a lot. I know our audience has as well. Thank you for taking time to talk with us today on the Partnership Economy Podcast.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Dave.